to advertise, email podcast@thisismaji.com.
Release yourself from order and logic and enter a new place. It's not work. It's not home. Here, no maps have been drawn. No books have been written. Nothing is certain. Everything is possible. Welcome to podcast and chill with Matt G.
I'm assuming this doesn't end well.
So, South Africa feels like it's trapped in permanent crisis management mode. Every week, it's another scandal, another commission, another arrest, another tender controversy. It's also another institution that's trying to explain itself in real time. And what's becoming harder to ignore is this. The same pressure points keep appearing everywhere. Power, accountability, and public trust. Ramaphosa and Phalaphala return to the spotlight. Top cops are being arrested while refusing to hand over passwords. Bapatile Eng, one of South Africa's most feared taxi figures, finally lands behind bars, and a multi-billion rand textbook tender is raising questions while literacy rates continue to dwindle. Different headlines, same pressure points. Welcome to another episode of Frankly Speaking. So let's start with our family meeting. And these are some of the outcomes from the Ramaphosa, Phalaphala and the courts. Now, we often say when the courts become part of the political timeline, the public starts asking whether justice is being delayed or it's being strategically managed. South Africa is also back in family meeting territory again. Fellow South Africans. But this time we're speaking about Phalaphala. The scandal that simply refuses to die. Now, for anyone who may have forgotten what all of this is actually about, Phalaphala refers to the theft of millions of US dollars hidden inside a furniture at President Cyril Ramaphosa's private game farm in Limpopo. Not in a bank, not formally declared through ordinary transparent channels, but kept inside a couch. Let's not make sure if you'll see that man. But that detail matters because the entire controversy is built around one uncomfortable public question. Why was so much foreign currency sitting inside furniture at a private farm in the first place? You see where the danger is? You see where the danger is? The latest development revolve around impeachment-related proceedings and Ramaphosa's legal attempts to challenge aspects of that process. So the presidency argues that this is about constitutional correctness, legal clarity, and ensuring proper procedure. Okay. Because the EFF argues something very different. They say Ramaphosa is using the courts to delay accountability and avoid a process that could politically damage him.
My fellow South Africans, while there have been calls in some circles that I should resign, nothing in the Constitutional Court judgment compels me to resign my office. The Constitutional Court made no finding of any kind regarding my alleged conduct. The court made no finding on whether there was prima facie evidence of misconduct, nor if the alleged conduct, if established, justifies impeachment, and that. A constitutional court judgment reinforces the principles, the rights, and processes underpinning our constitutional order. This explicitly includes the right to take the report of the independent panel on review. I therefore respectfully want to make it clear that I will not resign.
But here's what's important. This issue is no longer only whether money was stolen. The issue is what the broader reports and investigations suggest about transparency, disclosure, and presidential accountability. Because the public interpretation of the declassified findings is essentially this. Even if no criminal conviction exists, the situation itself is deeply irregular. Large amounts of undeclared foreign currency, questions around tax compliance, reporting procedures, and also how that theft was handled. Another thing that comes into play is whether state resources were improperly used afterward. And politically, this becomes devastating, especially for the president. Because for ordinary South Africans, the symbolism is impossible to ignore. If an ordinary citizen had millions in foreign cash hidden in furniture, South Africans know exactly how aggressively authorities would respond. So, the perception problem becomes, does accountability slow down when power is involved? And perception does really matter because South Africans, we're exhausted, guys. Our tired is tired. We've got electricity instability, inflation on food and fuel prices, unemployment, youth unemployment in particular, infrastructure collapse, and crime. Now, in all of this, you add a political system where legal reviews, court challenges, parliamentary processes, and institutional disputes start overlapping all at once. Eventually, the public starts asking, who exactly is governing while everyone is litigating? And this is why Palapala became bigger than just zaga, money inside a couch. It's evolved into a symbol of whether South Africa's political elite are subjected to the same scrutiny as ordinary citizens, or whether power creates its own slower version of justice. Because leadership isn't only tested during crisis. Leadership is also tested when the public begins questioning whether accountability itself is negotiable. And while the presidency fights political fires in court, another part of the state is now fighting fires inside law enforcement itself. Because the Madlanga Commission is beginning to expose just how deep institutional instability may actually go. So let's look at this Madlanga Commission. This is where the state is investigating itself. South Africans now treat political scandals like WhatsApp statuses. If you miss one, don't worry. Another one is going to load. It's busy, right? Because the state is now investigating the very people once trusted to protect the state. The Madlanga Commission is no longer producing isolated embarrassment. It's producing a picture of systemic decay. Because just look at this past week. More arrests, more suspensions, more senior officials implicated. And these aren't just junior officers. These are senior SAPS leadership. The people that we trust with operational authority, the people that are responsible for enforcing the law. So this is where the story almost becomes surreal. Around 18 police-linked arrests have intensified scrutiny around law enforcement integrity. Some suspects say they are cooperating, but reports around withheld passwords and devices have also raised eyebrows. Because immediately the public ask, is there full cooperation? Why are investigators still locked out of phones? We'll help, but the password, Chief, that one is not, let's not make sure. I'll say, Hopola, you don't remember your own password. Stop it. Because in 2026, the real story often lives inside the device. Messages, encrypted chats, financial trails, call records, coordination. Remember, Mkhwana, as you said, even if view once or you delete, this is where you keep up, boss. And that's where modern corruption cases either collapse or explode. But the deeper issue here is trust. South Africans have watched commissions come and go for years. We had Zondo. We had state capture. We have constant municipal corruption inquiries, procurement investigations, huge headlines, massive evidence that is always shown, but very few meaningful consequences. We are not seeing these people in orange overalls. But this commission is becoming harder to ignore because the examples are starting to sound unbelievable. You now have senior law enforcement figures themselves being implicated in corruption-related investigations. People who once stood at podiums promising to fight organized crime are now sitting with legal teams explaining their own conduct. I mean, at this point, the Matlanga Commission sounds less like a commission and more like a Netflix crime series with too many plot twists. Let's also speak about officials returning to work. And this is while controversy follows them like a GPS pin that won't switch off. You know, when you've got your phone and you forgot to switch it off and says, hey, 10 left, 10 left, ka toilet, stop it. Because here we're speaking about an Ekurhuleni city manager, Kagiso Lerutla, who returns to work, also known as the Slay Queen Slayer. Kagiso Lerutla is expected back at work. And this is despite him facing fraud and corruption charges. And these are linked to allegations that someone else appeared in court on his behalf in a speeding matter. Must be nice. Authorities allege that large sums of money changed hands to make the problem disappear. You know how in the movies, right, they hire a body double to execute the stunts. Lerutla allegedly paid someone to be a court double while he went about his life. I guess, wow. So now the public sees politicians that are under scrutiny, municipal leadership that's under scrutiny, police leadership, which is also under scrutiny. And at some point, the public stops seeing all of these isolated scandals. They start seeing patterns of institutional instability. And here's where the truly dangerous part comes. When trust in law enforcement collapses, people stop believing that the rules apply equally. Eba mengelmus, manyofonyof. That's when conspiracy theories start to grow. That's when political cynicism starts to grow. That's when institutional legitimacy also weakens. Because policing depends heavily on public confidence. So those men in blue, we have to trust them. Now, once citizens start believing that the system protects insiders more effectively than actual public, the moral authority of the institution begins collapsing from within. And we're seeing that in real time. And perhaps the most important question around the Matlanga Commission is no longer who gets arrested. It's, will anyone important actually face meaningful consequences? Because South Africans are tired of commissions becoming archives instead of turning points. And while the country watches top cops being investigated, another South African power structure is also back in the headlines. The taxi industry. And this time, one of its most controversial names is at the center of it. Let's speak about Joe Ferrari Sibanyoni. Power, taxis, and fear. For years, his name has circulated around discussions involving taxi influence, alleged underworld links, violence, and even regional transport power in Mpumalanga. He's a powerful taxi boss, linked in testimony around organized crime allegations. He's also facing extortion and money laundering charges. Now, authorities allege protection fee schemes linked to business operations, while his name continues surfacing in broader underworld investigations connected to the Matlanga Commission. The Big Five cartel. Witnesses at the commission place Sibanyoni at the center of the alleged Big Five cartel, which is a powerful Gauteng-based organized crime network. Now, this cartel is allegedly involved in illegal security companies, contract killings, and cross-border hijackings. He's allegedly connected to supposed businessman Vusimuzi Cat Matlala. Now, the story reflects long-standing fears around the overlap between taxi power structures, organized crime, business interests, and political influence. We all know that in South Africa, taxis are never just about transport. They're about power. So Joe Ferrari Sibanyoni is not just another taxi operator. For years, his name has circulated around discussions which involve taxi influence, alleged underworld links, violence and regional transport power in Mpumalanga. So the name Ferrari itself became associated with wealth, fear, influence inside sections of the very taxi industry. Now, police say Sebanyoni and his co-accused face extortion-related charges linked to allegations involving a businessman in the mining sector. One report claims their later demands reach around 25 million rand. And suddenly, this becomes much bigger than transport. Because in South Africa, control of movement often also becomes control of money, territory, and influence. He has long been associated with influence inside sections of the taxi industry, an industry that controls the daily movement of millions of South Africans. And more, Mzansi, control of movement also equals power. We've all seen when the taxis strike, the country comes to a standstill because taxis are not a side economy anymore. They are the transport system for huge parts of the country. People rely on them to go to work, school, hospitals, townships, industrial zones. Which means certain taxi figures accumulate enormous influence, economic influence, street influence, and sometimes political influence. So now police have arrested Sibanyoni. And while authorities reportedly continue searching for alleged accomplices connected to the case, and legally, everyone remains innocent until proven guilty. However, socially, these arrests feed into something that is far bigger, guys. The long-standing perception that parts of the taxi industry have operated for years in an atmosphere where violence, intimidation, and fear have become normalized. Taxi violence in South Africa isn't new. Entire routes have historically become battlegrounds. Shootings over territory, assassinations linked to route control, intimidation against competitors, even intimidation against the public. And at times, it has looked less like public transport competition and more like organized territorial warfare. And that's why many people react to these arrests with a strange mix of shock, because inevitably, for many, many years, South Africans have quietly asked, how do some of these figures become so powerful for so long without any major intervention? How are they getting away with it? Because for a lot of us, it's a very uncomfortable conversation and even a very dangerous conversation, because eventually people begin wondering whether parts of the state become too weak, too compromised, or too dependent to confront certain power structures earlier. And that, for me, is dangerous. Because once communities become dependent on systems operating partly outside of formal state control, alternative centers of authority then emerge. And these happen not through elections, not through constitutional processes, but through economics, fear, and control of movement. And once fear becomes profitable, removing it becomes extremely difficult. So let's speak about profitable systems. When education budgets become procurement battles, the people who lose first are usually the children. Siviwe Kwahube requested an investigation into alleged irregularities, and these were involving a 1.6 billion rand textbook tender, ordered partly to a relatively new publisher. The ANC has also publicly condemned any possible corruption that has been tied to the deal. South Africa's education sector is now facing another procurement controversy. However, this time, the numbers are massive, and the questions are ugly. And unfortunately, once again, the victims are children. There's a specific education tender controversy, and I don't know whether it's procurement or it's priority failure. Because when education budgets become procurement battles, the people who lose, first of all, are usually the children. So South Africa is once again confronting a familiar national storyline. Multi-billion rand tender, serious procurement questions, and a public that is asking, how, guys, how does this keep happening? Because at the center of the controversy is a textbook procurement deal reportedly worth around $1.6 billion. Now, here's where the story becomes explosive. The company at the center of the controversy, which is called Lighthouse Publishers, reportedly had little to no major publishing footprint before securing approvals tied to a procurement process worth around 1.6 billion rand. This is not a household publishing giant. It's not a long-standing established educational powerhouse. It's a relatively unknown company allegedly linked to a residential address in Simonstown. And immediately, South Africans are asking, because now we want to know, how does a company with limited visible publishing history suddenly secure access to contracts tied to billions in educational material while literacy rates continue collapsing? Our kids are not getting smarter. So, according to multiple literacy assessments in recent years, a massive percentage of South African learners struggle to read for meaning by around grade four. And this means many children can technically read words on a page, but cannot fully understand what they're reading. And guys, this is catastrophic. Because once reading comprehension collapses early, every subject afterwards becomes harder. Whether it's maths, science, history, everything. Zonke, bonke. And yet while these classrooms or these children struggle, billions continue circulating through procurement systems. That's why this scandal feels so offensive to the public, because children are not supposed to become collateral damage inside tender politics. I mean, come on. It's swabeling. Because the questions keep multiplying. How long had this company existed for? Who benefited? What experience did it actually have? Who approved the process? Were proper checks done before billions were allocated? Because the fear is no longer simply corruption. The fear is that procurement itself has become the main objective, that contracts matter more than the outcomes, that the system is exceptionally efficient at moving money, but deeply inconsistent at producing educational success. And this is where the political pressure on Basic Education Minister Sivue Khwarube intensifies. Not necessarily because she created the structural problems. Many of these issues predate her, but because she now carries responsibility for restoring public confidence. And this is the truly tragic part. Education is supposed to be the ladder out of poverty. But when procurement controversies keep colliding with collapsing literacy, overcrowded classrooms and teacher shortages, and worst of all, unequal schooling outcomes, education starts functioning less like a ladder and more like a trap. But at the same time, tenderpreneurship remains incredibly profitable, just not for the learners. And eventually South Africans begin asking a brutal question. How many generations are being sacrificed while politically connected systems continue cashing in? Right, so let's look at different stories and maybe some of the same pressure points. Because that's the pattern connecting every story tonight. Phalaphala, the Matlanga Commission, Joe Ferrari, Sibanyoni, the textbook tender controversy. All of these, different sectors, different institutions, different personalities. But the same pressure points keep appearing. Accountability, trust, power, and consequences. We as ordinary South Africans are no longer reacting only to individual scandals. We are reacting to accumulation. When is it eventually going to end? Because eventually, as citizens, we stop asking, what happened this time? And we start asking, is the system functioning properly? Or is there even a system for that matter? Because that's the real danger. It's not opposition attacks. It's not headlines. It's not social media outrage. The real danger is emotional disconnection from institutions. Because once the public stops believing accountability is real, governance becomes infinitely harder. And right now, South Africa feels like a country trying to govern while simultaneously expanding itself in real time. So all of these pressure points are no longer isolated. Politics, policing, education, transport, they're all exposing the same underlying question. Who is ultimately accountable when institutions stop inspiring public confidence? This has been Being Frank with Mac. Different stories, same pressure points. Until next time. Thanks.